The Screen Lawyer Podcast is brought to you by Cape Sokol Attorneys at Law.
On this week's episode of the Screen Lawyer Podcast, I'm really excited to be on set, on location, and that's going to be a theme today, with my guest Meg Halsky, Halsky Studios, filmmaker, storyteller, creator, and client and friend. Welcome, Meg.
Thank you for having me.
This is going to be a blast. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, stick around.
Welcome to the Screen Lawyer Podcast, at the intersection of the entertainment world, intellectual property law, and emerging technology, where we discuss legal and business issues surrounding any type of content that ends up on your screens. I'm your host, Pete Salsic, the Screen Lawyer.
Hey there. Welcome to the Screen Lawyer Podcast. I'm Pete Salsic, the Screen Lawyer. And today, you may recognize or notice that our set's a little bit different because instead of our normal Screen Lawyer studio, we are on location here with Meg Halsky, our guest. And I'm so excited, Meg, you're joining us. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome. So who's Meg Halsky?
Well, I'm a writer, director, living in the Midwest and trying to make it in Hollywood.
That's, well, all right, there's a lot there, right? So let's unpack a little bit of that stuff. So, and we've known each other for a little while, so, you know, we're kind of teasing this out, but one of the things that I think is really fun to do on this podcast with my guests is to learn how things make it to a screen, or why, maybe even the better question, why do you want to make stuff for a screen? What's the why behind you? Tell me a little bit about that, and then we'll walk back and get some history.
Yeah, so I want to tell stories about underrepresented characters in the Midwest. I feel like the Midwest gets a bad rap. It's underrated and undervalued,
yeah.
And there's a lot of heart here. There's a lot of culture. There's a lot going on. It's not a cow town. St. Louis is a special place.
It is.
Rich with history and architecture, yeah. And beautiful places and real, authentic, hardworking people. And I happen to be one of those. And so, you know, about a few years ago, I kind of put my flag in the sand and said, darn it, I'm going to figure out how to level up my career and go after what I want to do, which is to be a showrunner, to create television and films in LA.
And, awesome.
Yeah. So that's what that's the path that I'm on right now. And I'm deep into the path.
Where'd you get started? How did you get into this world?
So I went to film school at Webster. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful experience. I loved my teachers. I loved my fellow students. And, you know, they really fostered a love of storytelling for me.
Right.
Kathy Corley was one of my advisors, and she really was a champion for local filmmaking and still is today. And so my senior project, I came to her and she's like, what are you going to do? You're going to film a scene? I said, nope, I'm going to film a feature.
Wow.
And she's like, a feature? You're not doing a feature. You can't get a feature done. And luckily, my friend Bradley Bowers on Thanksgiving night came to my door when I was living in Tower Grove East and said, hey, I wrote something. You want to make something together? And I said, actually, I need a senior project. I told my advisor I was doing a feature. So we worked together on very guerrilla style back then.
Right.
You know, it was like 2003. He was able to cull together some money to buy the first Panasonic mini DV.
Yeah.
And we shot all over town. We shot at Joni's Pizza and on the North Riverfront, and
probably without location agreements.
No, we didn't do any of that as a student.
Good,
but
good.
Webster was awesome because, you know, they insured our project.
Right.
They gave us the tools. Bad Dog, even back then, allowed us to use some equipment. Henry Abler, who's an excellent DP in town, signed on to be our DP, and boy, he was so patient with me. You know, I had never really directed anything. And he was incredible to work with, and we made a feature, and it was my love letter to St. Louis back then, and it's been fun. Fast forward to 20 years,
right.
to create my love letter to St. Louis again in 2023.
You're still writing love letters to St. Louis,
yeah.
right? But you come from a different, there's more maybe to the story, right?
Yeah.
Than
yeah.
because you've spent in those 20 intervening 20 years, you've done a lot of other stuff in the production world, right? You took that and
well,
ran
I started
with
at
it.
The bottom. I was a PA for the Discovery Health Channel. I held a boom over an open womb and thought to myself, I'm never having kids. You know, flash forward, I have
I was gonna
six
say,
kids.
Right.
But, you know, I think every role that I've played on a set has prepared me for today.
Right.
So I started as a PA. I also was a shooter at one point, a B camera. Operator. I have produced, majority of my work has been producing.
Mm-hmm.
So taking a creative idea all the way to fruition.
Right.
And that's where my multitasking mother of six skill set comes into play. I'm organized and a little bit of a taskmaster. So I can see kind of the end result. Easily.
Yeah.
Back planning is sort of my thing.
I could visualize your, the you know, anybody that's a parent of more than one kid has had some version of that color-coded calendar.
Oh,
but
sure.
I can picture yours looks a lot like a production schedule, right? If somebody
yeah.
knows that world, you've
I
got everybody there.
I have it
there.
Down to a couple minutes. The day is planned.
That's right. We got to go.
They don't love it, but
yeah.
that's, I mean, my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And so, you know, over the last few years, I've sort of decided it's time to get serious about my dream. I went to school at Webster in 2003. It's 20 years later. I've had wonderful experiences in advertising, directing, producing commercials for passion brands. I just came off of 18 months working with an incredible agency in Portland North and their client, Hydro Flask.
Right.
And that gig really forced me to level up my skill set in many areas.
Yeah.
You know, being able to fly into a city and hire crew and execute the vision
right.
on time, on budget, on brand. And so for me, coming off of that really intense experience of getting on 36 flights in a year.
Right.
And meeting new people, understanding how other markets are handling production and the changes
yeah.
in
yeah.
how people approach production, even down to the what gear, what is the gear that's being used
right.
and what is the story and how is it being told for brands.
Right.
And so I've really enjoyed it. I loved it so much. Also being on the road, I got really inspired to create my own work. And
yeah.
so having time in airports, having time at night after production to really think about characters, think about places, and think about the stories of underrepresented people that I want to
right.
tell.
Especially newer filmmakers or you know, production people, the concept of, you know, on time, on budget, and on brand. Those are three important things, and each is different. And in my experience, you know, I've had the opportunity to work on some independent features, and the ones that were successful, in the most part, the team had cut their teeth for a long time in the commercial production world, right? Where you've got real money. I mean, this is a serious budget, but you got to know where you're going to be, what day, who's there. You know, you don't have a lot of room to play with, and you got to deliver it fairly quickly,
mm-hmm.
and it's got to be excellent.
Yeah.
Right, and you are dealing with different crew and different cities and those things. I think it's a really cool way to get into the world that you're in right now.
Yeah, and I think you know the thing about commercial production is that you need to be decisive and you need to be easy to work with, because everybody has a role
right.
on sets, and everybody wants to flex in their flow states. You know, they want to shine.
Yeah.
You have to allow a crew and a collaboration and an energy exchange to happen on a set. And so I really want to take that into my personal
yeah.
work. And the great news is, you know, I can do that here in St. Louis. I have long-term crew relationships. Right. Who, these are my friends. These are people that I go have a beer with. That's invaluable. About a year ago, I decided, well, the decision-making happens in L.A. I probably need to be in L.A.
Right.
I didn't know how I was going to do it. You know, like, I have to feed 8 people in our house. So, you know, my partner and I, Mark Halsky, sat down and we're kind of like, okay, is it worth being out there? And the answer was just, yes, we have to go after this dream. And so I have a little bungalow in West Hollywood that I share with 2 other women in the industry who live elsewhere. My roommates live in New York and Minneapolis.
So you have a crash pad.
We do. We have a little calendar, a little Google calendar that we sign up for time there. One is a writer, a television writer, and one owns an improv company in New York.
Wow.
And so they're also wonderful mentors for me as well. They think it's awesome that I'm going out there and chasing a dream. And it's been a great way to begin the process of learning how to be a showrunner.
Right.
And so for me, I'm a world builder. I write and I direct. And so the last few years have been about, what does that mean to be a showrunner? How do you get in the room with the buyers? Buyers meaning Hulu, Netflix, HBO, you know, the type of programming that I want to create is not necessarily network stuff. You know, I aspire to be more of like A24 type of, and so does everybody these
well,
days.
Right. That's legit, right? That and that helps. That helps to define. I don't know, define is probably the wrong word, but to help shape a little bit. You know, you've got. We all have a finite amount of time, and a finite amount of energy to focus on the things that you really do. And you've done, we've talked about this, and I want to get into this a little bit, your transition, if you will, from, you know, the sort of documentary, docu-series, commercial production, where, you know, for lack of a better way to say it, you're a storyteller, but you're really telling somebody else's story.
Right.
Right? You're either following the subject of the documentary or the docu-series, or you're telling a story of a brand, that sort of thing. And you know, you're shifting, and shifting is wrong, because I know you've been doing this creating all along, but now your effort is to say, okay, this is where I want to be the world builder, right? I love the way you describe that term. I mean, tell me a little bit more about that. Who are some of your influences?
Oh man, David Lynch, for sure. I love Adam McKay, pretty much anything he does, Matt Wiener.
Right.
You know, like
And in that sense, they're literally, when you watch their programming, you live inside of the world they create, right?
It's aspirational. It's character-driven. I think for me, I've had stories living in my head for decades, and it's once I started to write, it's almost like I couldn't stop.
Yeah, interesting. So
I have a family drama TV series that takes place in Ireland. And it's called Connor Pass, and it's a story that I started writing 15 years ago. We were in Dingle, Ireland for a family trip, and being there was so inspiring. I created this story that's based on a character I developed for Michael Fassbender. I went through the Sundance TV writers program. It was incredible to actually take those characters that have been living full arcs in my head for 15 years and put them on the paper. And I will say, like, it was such a beautiful process, and it meant so much to me that since then, I haven't been able to stop writing.
Interesting. Well, 2 things you said, I think, are interesting there. One, you said a character you wrote for Michael Fassbender. Now, does Michael Fassbender know that you wrote this character?
He will.
He will. That's right. That's important. But it's more like your inspiration, right?
He's one of my favorite actors. So he inspires a lot of my work.
Right.
His dark side, you know, the fact that he is European, that's very enticing to me. He's just a hell of an actor. But I try to build characters that are super layered and usually in identity crisis.
Okay.
So a lot of my work deals with identity, underrepresented characters dealing with repression, identity, and obstacle, because I know a lot about that.
Well,
so, you know,
there's a saying that somebody said to me many years ago, you know, sometimes you are who you are either because of or in spite of. And it's probably usually a mix of both,
sure,
right?
There's always a little internal struggle, right, especially as a creative or an artist or a sensitive person like me. I try to work for my intuition and put myself in uncomfortable situations, including LA,
right,
and be disciplined about my work. So part of my work and part of my process is getting out of my comfort zone,
sure,
being in places that make me uncomfortable, meeting new people. I just went through a Groundlings workshop. Do you know what the Groundlings,
yeah,
is? It's an improv. And I,
right,
swear it was so good for me. Because I kind of went in and I was like, oh, I'll learn some skills about improv,
right,
and,
right,
like, take it back to my directing. And it, like, flattened me. It, like,
wow.
I walked out and I felt like the biggest piece of ever. And it was so good for me, though, because that set me on a journey to start to really dive into the acting process and to really be a director for actors. My background was in documentary, so,
right,
I didn't get to be with actors as,
right,
much as I wanted to be, except for in film school and then a little bit after,
yeah,
and on my passion projects like my music videos and short films and stuff. So for me, I wanted to kind of back up and learn about the whole acting process. So I went through Stella Adler, I went to Lee Strasberg, which is method acting,
right,
and then Groundlings, and then UCSB, the Upright Citizens Brigade. And I really dove into the acting process to really understand what is the method
right,
of an actor, what is the modality. And then that way, when I am in a room with actors, I can meet them where they are, and I can respect and honor their process.
Right. And they each have a different process, right?
For sure.
I mean,
for,
you know,
sure,
somebody needs business, somebody else needs to process, somebody needs,
yeah,
to know the why, somebody doesn't care about the why, right?
For,
I mean,
sure.
Yeah.
And it's fun. There's actually a great actor here in town, Scott Michael Dunn, who all of us who are in town who have,
right,
made anything indie, he is graciously given his time to, and he's an excellent method actor.
Yeah.
And so also it was fun to go back and learn about his process and then come back to him,
sure,
you know, several projects in and be like, okay, I get you, man.
Right.
I understand you now.
Used to drive me crazy, but now I can live
with
it.
Oh, he still drives me,
right,
crazy, for sure. Yeah. So that's been fun. And then also just keeping up on new techniques, lighting, the industry,
right,
you know, reading deadline, meeting with agents, meeting with development execs. It was great that Groundlings workshop, there was like, you know, 5 Lionsgate development execs in my workshop,
wow,
with me.
Wow.
So, and you just never know. Is that's,
right,
that's the beauty of being in LA, is that you don't know where you're going to bump into,
right,
you know, the next contact or the next, you know, friend,
right,
you know, because,
yeah,
it's a lonely place.
Yeah.
So meeting friends in the industry, and everybody's in the industry there.
Right.
So it's, you know, I talk about my big dream, my big Hollywood dream, and they're like, oh, get in line,
right,
you know, but,
right,
but I
but
have.
But that's the point. I,
yeah,
mean,
I
who cares if everybody else has the same dream? And all that matters,
yeah,
is your dream.
Well, and I learned really quick, too, that you can't just go out there with, like, one body, one, like, piece of work.
Right.
You can't go out there with, like, one show idea. You have to have a catalog of work and lots of experience,
right,
and understand your own point of view. And so doing the work and building my own self-respect has, like Joan Didion says, you build your self-respect. And that frees you from the expectations of others and gives you back to yourself.
Yeah, wow.
And so that's what's really,
yeah,
like been my fuel,
yeah,
throughout this process, is just doing the work every day, writing,
right,
every day, working the pitch deck every day. What's the new conference,
right,
I need to be at? Who do I need to talk to? And being driven and disciplined about the path.
And I've seen that, like, we trying to schedule some things with you, like, no, I'm writing on that morning. That's my morning to write, or this or that. And I've always found it kind of interesting with different creative people. And one of the reasons that I do what I do and get to do it with my partners and colleagues is because we love the creative process, you know. And I, you know, I spent time as a cartoonist. I spent time still play in a, you know, lousy dad cover rock band, right? But those were never going to pay my bills.
Right.
But as a lawyer, getting to work my way to a point where in an entertainment practice, we can be valuable people on the team for people like yourselves, that excites me every single day. But creative people are all different, right? I guess by, you know, people are different. That's not, you know, brilliance. But with creative people, I think so many different people have a different type of process. I know some people that literally, you know, something will pop in their head and they just have to stop everything else. And it might be days before they come back to realize they didn't put pants on.
Yeah.
Right. And then others, you know, you talked about the word discipline, and I think that's a pretty powerful term. Describe what you mean by that discipline. How does that work in your creative process?
For me, seeds are planted at night. And for me, I have to be out in the world. I'm not a homebody at all. In fact, it's a problem. I like to be out. And that doesn't mean that I like to go out and drink and be at bars and
right.
stuff.
No,
I need to be out in the world.
Sure.
Connecting with people. That's how I get my energy and my ideas. And so a lot of my process has to do with being out either at night or in a new neighborhood, walking the streets, interacting with culture, seeing beautiful architecture, listening to great live music. It all fuels the machine.
Right.
And so then if it's fully fueled, just like an engine, then I can be more disciplined. So the discipline
okay.
starts with the inspiration, and the inspiration has to be fueled. And that takes effort. I can't sit in an office at my computer, however pretty my office space is, and get inspired. You know, I have to be out in the world yeah. interacting and exchanging energy with people and places. And so, you know, LA is part of that. New York is part of that. And Chicago,
Paris, Milan,
yeah. you know, all the pretty places
right.
for sure. And observing XYZ generations. I'm really interested
yeah.
in, you know, identity right now. I'm really interested in how the world is changing and changing us and how we interact with each other. And it's been really cool to fuel that fire inside me to create. And so the discipline is, you know, multi-layered, but
fun.
Starts with having some fun.
Yeah,
and
that's I love that.
Loving that's, your city.
Yeah, so and that's I want to talk about the city too, because one of the things that I think is interesting is your and really I think these things go together, right? Because I know you've got a body of you know, maybe close to a half dozen projects that are really pretty well formed, right, at
mm-hmm.
this stage, from even a full pilot shot on one and then pitch decks and whole character arcs, treatments, I mean, really, mm-hmm. scripts, right? You've got, because I've seen it all, right? You have a serious body of work, which is, I want to spend a little time on some of those things. But a lot of those have something about St. Louis in them, right? And there's a reason that you're here, but not just here, right? This is home, but you are working in LA, you are in New York, you are in Portland, you are wherever you need to be. So it's not as if this is the only place to work or that you can work. But why stay home, if you will? What is it about St. Louis that inspires you?
Well, when I was 10, I lived in Blue Springs, Missouri, and my grandparents lived here, and we would
okay.
come and see them all the time. And on my 10th birthday, I wished that I would move to St. Louis. And my dad was...
I wonder how many 10-year-olds are out there wishing that right now.
I was. I kid you not. My dad was climbing the corporate ladder at the phone company, and it just so happened that Ma Bell, like, heeded my call. And so we ended up moving to St. Louis, and I was really excited about it. And I've always been really interested in the neighborhoods of St. Louis, the identity of St. Louis. I got really involved in Metropolis St. Louis in my 20s, and I call that my college because I had a zigzaggy, you know, college experience. Sure. I went as an adult, and Metropolis really... it really was the instigator of my passion for St. Louis.
And that was a really cool organization at the time, right? I mean, young people deciding, we like our city, let's explore it. Let's try new things.
And so that is going to carry into my work. I mean, I think St. Louis is its own thing. You know, I showed Sylvie Hu, my latest pilot project, to an HBO development exec. And when she was finished watching it, she was like, I thought you shot this in New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
You know, I was like, no, that is St. Louis. It's not New Orleans. And so we talked about the architecture and the richness of the streets and the people that you see. And the, you know, the sense of culture and place is strong. We have a strong, strong brand. And we need more people telling a good story about St. Louis and about Missouri in general. I mean, we've got Kansas City is a wonderful place to create. It's got a thriving creative industry.
Right, it does.
And, you know, St. Louis is not a cow town. It's not a flyover city. It has its own thing going. And I'm on a mission to speak the truth about St. Louis and LA and wherever this crazy dream of mine takes me.
Right. So, you know, you were talking about working in St. Louis and wanting to, you know, show St. Louis to the world a little bit, right? And as St. Louis, and sometimes we have that sense of, you know, I don't know, people don't like us or whatever, right? And I think that's kind of silly. But you're an example of somebody who is creating here. But tell us what is it like to do that here, right? I mean, yes, you can be passionate about the architecture. You can be passionate about the people and the reality of it.
Yeah.
But you still need people, right, to make things. What is the production community? What is the creative community like here for someone like you?
I mean, it's a very loving, supportive place. You know, I'm friends with all my competitors. We have beers together. We have fun. We use the same crew. We know who's good. And, you know, like, we love to cultivate a strong, you know, community among ourselves.
But there is a crew. I mean, that's a real. It's not like there's six people in town, and if you don't get the six, you got to wait, right?
No, I mean, I mean, I think also having Webster here, that film school turns out great talent. It's easy to create here. It's a community that fosters collaboration. I can't say enough about how much I love it here to create. There's no obstacles. You know, there's great crew, ready to work, hungry, you know.
Talented.
And I've been a lot of places, especially over the last few years. I've been all over the world and shot with crews all over the world. And I'd, you know, put our crew up against any crew in the world, including LA, including New York. And it's because we've had to hustle and work a little harder. You know, like, we have very talented professional crew here, and in all regards, PAs all the way up.
Right.
And, you know, it's hard to take your pick.
Yeah, no, that's, and I'm glad you saw it, because that's been my experience too, right? Even as someone who's in the industry in a different way, knowing how many people are involved and still discovering new studios and new people on an almost daily basis. Let's get in a little bit to one of your current projects, your pilot for Sylvie Hu, right? So I'm gonna set the stage a little bit here. I got to watch this pilot. And I want you to tell
spoilers.
Us how, I'm not going to get any spoilers. No, I won't. But so, and I want to hear kind of about the process, because this came together kind of in a wild way. You talked about something that you spent 13 years creating and then now something that is very different. But I got to watch this with my partner, Gary. We came over to your studio at home and watched the pilot last week. And you had told me a little bit about it, right? But I really kind of went in not knowing, right? Which to me is the most fun way to watch something.
It's risky because what if it sucks?
And I had to say, oh, no, it was pretty good, Meg, really. No, but so the experience was really fun to watch. And some part of it is like, oh, I recognize that place. I recognize that place. And some of it was filmed like right where we're sitting, like right downstairs, right?
Right in the alley.
Yeah. So that's really cool, right? And and some part of you watching. But the last scene happens. I'm not going to, no spoilers. But when the last scene, I'm like, well, where's the next episode, right? And it was really, really cool.
Oh, I mean, I'm so glad you liked
really,
it.
Really good. But tell us a little bit about Sylvie Hu, but how it kind of came together.
Sure. Well, Sylvie Hu started with one scene that takes place in a diner, and it is an actual thing that happened in my life. It's loosely based on my 21st birthday.
Okay.
At least the pilot. It's a jumping off point.
Right.
And so Mark and I had been talking for years that we got to shoot that scene. And I'll be honest, I didn't have any work in July. And
so just July of this year,
yeah,
right?
Okay. There were no jobs in July for me. And so I said, well, I got to stay busy. Again, right. I want to keep going and create things always.
Right.
And so I said, I think I'm going to write a script for Sylvie Hu. And so I ended up sitting down and I wrote the scene, but then it was like, I think I'm going to write a TV series on this. And so Willa Stein wasn't going back to college until August.
She's the actress, local actress.
And Willa
actress,
Stein
right?
is, yeah, she's a Clayton High grad and soon-to-be star. And you better get on that.
She's very good.
She's going to be a big star. And I've sort of been following her. I'm friends with her parents. And she is outstanding, and she's gotten to where there was no way I wasn't going to try to work with
her.
And so I knew when I started writing that Willa was going to be Sylvie. And so I wrote this script and approached Willa, and of course she was like, of course, I would love to do this. And so within 3 weeks, we were shooting. And, you know, the great part, again, going back to it's easy to create right. in St. Louis, especially since it's my hometown and I have lots of friends here.
Right.
But every single person I called to ask if they would, it was all volunteer. No
sure.
one got paid.
Right.
Including locations. So, like, calling up my friend Jason Johnson, who has a gorgeous home, and saying, can we shoot there? And he didn't even
right.
pause. Dwayne Reed, who I didn't even know,
right.
called him up. Of course. Everybody was so welcoming,
right.
such a cheerleader. Like, I wouldn't get that in L.A. I'm not
right.
going to get that anywhere else, in Chicago or New York or anywhere. I mean, people have to hustle so hard and have three jobs in L.A.
Right.
You know, they're not going to help you with your thing. And so I just have a tremendous circle of people in my life here who I'm always going to be loyal to and who support me in a way that I couldn't get anywhere else.
Right.
And so Sylvie Hu was absolutely a love letter to St. Louis. Everybody involved gave of their time, gave of their energies, and we created something so beautiful that I'm so excited about.
It really is. I mean, when you told me how quickly it came together, how quickly it was written, how quickly it was shot, produced, edited, color correction, sound. I mean, I've watched it and I'm like, it does not look like something that was, one, it doesn't look like something thrown together. And I know creative things can happen quickly, so that's not a complete outlier. But it's so well done. It holds together. I mean, I literally want to see what's next.
Well, that's also because of two other people in this room right now. I mean, Mark Halsky
right.
is an incredible shooter, incredible editor, very meticulous when it comes to his crafting.
Right.
You know.
And it shows.
You know, and Tim Gebauer, you know, he's a big part of my creative process. He's, you know, my buddy who will go out with me late at night and get into trouble. Sylvie Hu would not have happened without the two of them. I can't tell you, and this goes back to our relationship, Pete, you know, having people in my corner who support me and believe in what I'm doing, you know, it's a lonely world out there in LA trying to be a filmmaker, trying to break through Hulu and Netflix and HBO and, you know, meeting with development execs and putting these pitch decks together and learning the industry and understanding that there are 100,000 paths in.
Right.
And I've got to throw out the lines wherever they'll go.
Right.
And so having people that I can come home to that support me and believe in me is invaluable and really is the fuel.
It's a great story because that is your story, right? It's not a made up story. That's the reality story that you have, and I agree with you. I mean, I think, you know, as we're you know, when we're here in the Midwest, when we do what we do, we deal with artists, you know, Gary's Music Practice, artists all over the world, and film productions all over the country, and even with an international flavor, and learning to kind of be here but be there is, you know, it's a leap, right? But then you realize, wait a second, we're professionals. Mm-hmm. We know this stuff. It's very cool, but you do need a team.
You're absolutely right.
And
you need a catalog of work. And so, you know, you and I are pitching 4 different series now.
Let's talk about those. So we talked about Sylvie Hoog. What's the log line, right? Meets that for some of your projects. Start with Sylvie Hoog.
So Sylvie Hoog tells the story of a 21-year-old divorcee who has to come back to her hometown of St. Louis, and with the help of her new boss, reassess life, identity, and direction. And he actually is an addict who is also on his path of figuring out who he is and what he wants in life. So it's sort of like, I say it's a queer Midwest girls, like HBO Girls, meets Hacks.
Oh, great show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, cool. All right.
Yeah. So dark comedy, but set here in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of the show.
Yeah.
Is St. Louis, Midwest.
Well, there's a line from the character Hannah at the very end of the episode, which resonated with me, and I think I can say this without spoiling anything, right? And she says to Sylvie, you know, something to the effect, St. Louis, your hometown, it will love you when no one else does, right? It's real. I thought that really cool.
Oh, I'm so glad you like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my little nudge. And actually, to tell you the truth, that was supposed to be the last line of the pilot.
Ah.
So we wrote the ending as we were shooting.
Nice.
So, but that's the fun part about being the world builder. You can make those choices.
Exactly right.
And based on what's happening with the actors. And I love that part of the process, being open and flexible and saying, I wonder what will happen, and then answering it in a totally different way.
And to the, you know, the point you made earlier about the discipline and also the inspiration, if you have the inspiration and you are disciplined, then you can depart from where you were and follow it,
With confidence.
Yeah.
You can make choices and feel a confidence in those choices. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes the very best thing about having a plan is that you have something to depart from.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And if when you know the landscape as well as I do, St. Louis is my home. I know these streets. I walk these streets. I take the trash out in that alley. So,
which is a cool scene.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's Sylvie Hoog.
So, Connor Pass, which I set in Dingle, Ireland, it is sort of a flashback kind of family drama that takes place in the 90s, European soccer culture, to present-day Dingle, Ireland. And it's basically a man grappling with the crimes of his past. He and his brother have had to come to terms with something that they witnessed and how it has affected their hometown, their community, and their generations of family members. So it's kind of a Yellowstone meets Mare of Easttown meets Big Little Lies.
Wow.
I always love beautiful places and interesting characters.
Right.
Obviously, everybody does. But I like kind of those off-the-beaten-path places that people don't think of first.
Right.
And Dingle, Ireland is near and dear to my heart. I love it, love it,
All
love
right.
it. And I've spent a lot of time there over a summer with my family and I wrote it during a period where my relationship with my ex was sort of coming to an end. And so I had big identity things happening in my life. And so that project really is kind of like my opus.
Yeah.
It really means a lot to me.
So what is that? Have you filmed anything? Is that a script? Is that?
I wrote the first season.
Okay.
And the pilot is finished. And Mark and I are working on pitch decks and that kind of thing. That's one that I really want to spend time crafting. The pitch, because I, you know, all of my work, it's strange. I get these lists of mandates and I'm like, yep, that checks off, So Connor Pass is one that I really want to go the distance and I want to direct that one.
Okay.
A lot of my projects, I'm open to whatever happens to them, great, but that's one that I will want to be involved in the production of.
Yeah.
And then we have Enjoyable Listens.
This is one. So this one,
every dude loves Enjoyable Listens.
Well, I think it's, so I don't want to, I'm not going to mess it. You tell us.
So Enjoyable Listens is a project that I have been working on with my best friend in Chicago, Doug Bobbenhaus. He used to be in Sunside and Half. He's an expat St. Louisan who's in Chicago. And he and his buddy Kyle were at South by Southwest. And they came up with this funny idea and came to me with it and said, hey, this is our idea. What do you want to do? So it's a musical spy series, comedy series. And we wrote it for Michael Shannon. And so it's kind of Scooby-Doo meets Get Smart meets, I say Killing Eve, but it's not dark. It's happy. It's funny. And it follows.
And maybe a little Flight of the Conchords or whatever.
Conchords all the way. So it follows a quirky little band, a UK Oxford band, who has spy secrets on their backing vocals. And
but they don't know that, right? I mean,
yeah. And so Michael Shannon's character is a spy, and he decides he's going to be their manager so that he can protect the secrets. And through the course of that, has an identity crisis and decides that he wants to maybe make a go of the music industry with this little quirky band. So they travel out throughout Europe and, you know, the normal 007 spy type, you know, fodder ensues.
Oh, I I've seen that deck and there's a real band that's part of the influence, right?
I mean... For sure. Yeah,
that's one that's I think is fantastic.
Yeah,
so
it's super
I'm excited
fun.
To see that one. Like you said, is the dude in me. I would absolutely 100% watch that one.
Yeah. For sure. So and it's been fun to Doug and I used to write songs together, and it's been fun to sort of rekindle our sort of writing partnership.
Cool.
And he's my best friend. He was my best man in our wedding.
Nice.
And so it's been great. And then I wrote a drag queen musical called Superstar.
Of course you did. And you have a Carpenter shirt on
today. Representing.
For the YouTube crowd.
Yes.
Yep.
So for me, that's about also about identity. It centers around a group of drag queens and an eating disorder support group. And
so the music of the Carpenters.
The music of the Carpenters
real.
And Karen Carpenter and female empowerment and feminine power. And, you know, the music of the Carpenters is all about love and loving yourself. And I just think it's like a really cool project. And I just have a deep, deep love and respect for the art of drag. And so I've always wanted to create. You know.
And what's the title of that one?
Superstar.
Yeah. Of course.
Anyway, it's a dream of mine to get that one made. And so right now, though, I'm an awardee of the Stowe Story Lab.
Tell me a little bit about that. How you got that and what does that mean? Because I know that you're doing that
so
right now.
So I got
now.
The writing bug
okay.
after we produced Tenuto, which is a little short film that won a bunch of awards at film festivals. And And Mark and I, similar to Sylvie, we just were like, it's August, let's do a project. And I reached out because I'm obsessed with Andrea Jared, who's the St. Louis Symphony violinist. Sure. She's amazing. And just like, we're so lucky to have her in St. Louis. And reached out to her to see if we could collaborate on something. And she said, sure, absolutely. I'm learning this new crazy song. Why don't you listen to it? Because that's what I want to perform. And I was like, sure. So I listened to it all weekend long. I must have listened to it like 70 times. Mm. And a little ghost story started percolating in my head. Yeah. And so in true St. Louis fashion, I looked for locations, and Boone Monument Village was like, absolutely, come shoot it. Wow. Here. And so over a weekend, really over like 36 hours, her husband, my son, and then Ann Freibogel, Mark Halsky, and Rob Rosenwinkel went out to this Marthasville, Missouri retreat center and created a spooky little ghost story that won a bunch of crazy awards. That sent me on the path to Sundance TV Writers Program. And then from there, I had the Connor Pass script, which I sent to Stowe to apply for their very awesome program. And so I'm learning under David Pope, who's this amazing screenwriter. He works with amazing people. And I'm writing a psychological feature length film right now called Novena. And it happens in a monastery with supermodels.
I mean, I don't know why that makes me laugh. I guess because it's not normally what I think about monasteries and supermodels, but that's the point, right? I mean, you're building a world for that as well.
For sure, for sure.
That's so cool. So, and I know this is not everything that you have, but these are all well-developed, active projects that you're currently working to get out into the world, right?
Yes. So I'm just knocking on doors and meeting with as many people. I don't say no to anything.
Right.
I go to every workshop I can go to, every meetup in LA, and then I regularly take acting classes. It's mostly so that I can meet actors. And really, I'm building my future team. I'm trying to create community
And
where I can.
The more time you spend with actors, the more time you study acting, the better you'll be able to direct and write for actors.
100%. And honestly, they're all characters.
Yeah.
So they also fuel the work.
Sure. They're part of that inspiration that leads to the
discipline. And they like that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this has been so cool, and thank you for spending this time. The Screen Lawyer audience is going to love this. And I want to, so there's a frame that I've always want to do on these podcast interviews, and part of that is because when we describe the work that we do, many years ago, I had a client and they did a lot of different things. Cool Fire Studios was the name of the company. And they would say, you know, well, what do you do? Well, we make things for screens, right? And that was sort of this, it wasn't a throwaway line, but it was a way to think broadly, right? And so after a while, I was like, well, I did all those contracts. I know how those businesses run. I'm a screen lawyer, right? And my friend Jim Hacking helped me come up with the name, and we did all that stuff. And it's made me realize that while I love being in the entertainment world, there are so many different screens that we all have, right? And we do everything on screens now. And so I like to ask people, and I'm going to ask you now, what's on your screen? And that might be the screen in your pocket, it might be the screen in your head, it might be the screen on your wall, but what's on your screen, Meg?
Final Draft is on my screen. That's my writing app that I use every day. My pitch decks are on my screen for sure, trying to make sure they're, you know, where they need to be and as good as they can be, or tweaking things. IMDb Pro, constantly stalking, trying to figure out who I'm going to be reaching out to next. Deadline Hollywood, Hollywood Reporter, you know, like industry stuff.
Is there something that's that's captured you right now?
Yeah, for me, it's A24. Like anything that A24 is putting out, I'm really interested in knowing about it. The stuff I watch TV-wise, Beef, Succession, I like world building, so obviously like Game of Thrones and Lost, that kind of stuff. But, you know, and then old episodes, Sex and the City, you know, being in New York City and, you know, living vicariously, that show meant a lot to me back in my 20s.
You're really, you know, sort of a screen omnivore, right? There's no, you know, not only this, not only that, both creatively and what you consume, right? Isn't it? I mean, sometimes just to sit back and let somebody else's creativity wash over you.
Totally. Inspiration can come from anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's really cool. Well, Meg, thank you. I mean, this has been what a treat to hang out here. Beautiful setting.
Thank you so much.
Hear your story. There's so much there. Folks, if you have enjoyed this conversation, first, find and follow Meg Halske because she's going places. And we're going to go with her. But definitely check her out. And if you like this podcast, check out the Screen Lawyer podcast. You can find, follow us anywhere you get your audio podcasts. And if you're watching on our YouTube channel, thank you. Be sure to hit that like and subscribe button down below and click on that video that's popping up next and get more Screen Lawyer content. We're always producing new episodes. You can check us out at thescreenlawyer.com and you may learn some more things about Meg Halske by going there. Meg, thanks again. This is a blast.
Thank you, Pete.
You're very welcome. All right. See you soon, folks.
You've been listening to the Screen Lawyer Podcast with your host, Pete Salsic, the Screen Lawyer. For more information or to stay connected, find us on social at the Screen Lawyer or check us out at thescreenlawyer.com.